Topic that is both timeless and very timely. And to do that, we're going to meet an important figure, someone who maybe was my acquaintance over time, but this year I've had a chance to spend more time with him. And we could frame this conversation, this discussion, this limud, in a story or in a parable. You know, what happens? Some of us grew up taking road trips. Some of us still take road trips. Some of us grew up when there were station wagons. Not everybody on this call knows what a station wagon is, but for those who do know what a station wagon is, you understand what I'm talking about. In the old days when we had station wagons, so in my family we had a station wagon, and the back part of the station wagon, which is, for those who are on the younger end, the precursor to the minivan, so we had a back seat that would face the back of the car, but when we would take long trips, like to Cleveland, or sometimes late night trips to New York, my parents, we lived in Baltimore, so we would put the back of the station wagon down. We would put it flat down, and my brother, my sister, we would have sleeping bags. I don't know if this is, if it was legal. I think in those days, you just, that's how you did. I see some people are nodding on this. So you're preparing for a road trip. You're going to take a road trip. And for a whole variety of reasons, maybe we didn't fill up the gas tank sufficiently. Maybe we didn't check the weather. A lot of things. And somehow, the expectation and the reality do not meet. The expectation of an awesome road trip that we were planning and how it was going to be so much fun and we were going to do all kinds of activities and we were going to spend quality time and it was going to be amazing, but then it didn't turn out that way. And I'm going to let you fill in the blank as to what it might mean that it didn't exactly turn out that way. But the truth is, we all had this experience, so to speak, kivayachol. And for those who want to follow along inside, I put them on the page for you if you'd like, but you don't need to. I'll share it on the screen, but again, you also don't need to. We were getting ready for an amazing road trip as a Jewish people, as you can see on the screen. The pasuk tells us, in Shmos and Perek Yotes, Atem re'isem asher asisi l'mitzrayim, vo'eso eschem al kanfei nesharim, vo'avi eschem eloi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to us, children, I took you out of Egypt, we're going to Sinai, and we're going to take a trip to the land of Israel. We're going to take a road trip. All the Jewish people, all 600,000, all 3 million, we're all going to get on this trip, and it's going to be al kanfei nesharim, on the wings of eagles. I guess the way to contemporarily understand that is first class. Al kanfei nesharim, on the wings of eagles. So Rashi points out, he quotes from Chazal, that the eagle flies high and he puts, or she puts, her young on the top of the wings so that the eagle shields the young from any potential predators or arrows. We were going to be protected, and we were going to be al kanfei nesharim. It was going to be first class. That's what our journey was going to be in the desert. That's what we expected. So when we set out, we were looking forward to the greatest divine road trip of all time. But what happened? We know what happened. There is a medrash that dramatizes this in an unbelievably painful way. Look at this on source number 2. Some of you are familiar with it. You heard from the Psichta in the Eicha Rabbah. Om Reb Levi. Reb Levi says, Kol Erev Tisha B'Av, every Tisha B'Av Eve, Haya Moshe Motzi Kruz B'Chol HaMachane. Moshe Rabbeinu would tell everyone, and again, if you're just joining, if you want to click in the chat, there are these Mar Makomos, but don't worry, they're on the screen. If not, you could just follow along. Don't worry. Moshe Rabbeinu would make an announcement. Erev Tisha B'Av, which is this coming Wednesday. Halavai Mashiach should come before then. Va'omer, and he said, Va'omer Tzu Lachpor. Go out and dig. And Lo Aleinu, previous generations taught us, but we can't even describe or imagine what that means, to dig graves. We can't even think about that. Even on Tisha B'Av, it's very difficult. Se'u lachbar, go dig your own graves. Va'yotzen v'chorfim kvaros v'yishenin bahem. Jews would go out, they would dig graves, and they would sleep there on Tisha B'Av night. L'shachris, in the morning, says the Medrash, Hayamotzi Kruz Moshe Rabbeinu would announce, Va'omer, and he would say, Kumu, get up, v'yifrishu ha'meisim in achayim. Va'yomdim u'motzien atzman. And they would find, they would get up, they would find Chamisha Elsar Elef Befrot Frot Chasru, Sheshmios Elef. And then the Medrash goes on to describe how on each successive year, thousands of people wouldn't get out of their graves in the morning. And you ask yourself, wait a minute. Let's think from an experience standpoint, from an emotional standpoint. We were told... We expected Al Kanfei Nesharim. We expected we were going to be carried on the wings of eagles. And where do we find ourselves? We find ourselves sleeping in a grave. Every year on Tisha B'Av, that's what the Medrash describes. So how did people deal with that? How did they manage? What did the Ribbono Shel Olam expect of them? To be in a situation where they expected one thing and they got something else. Was it their fault? Yes, it was their fault. But still, how did they handle that? What happens when we find ourselves in situations, Rachmona Litzlan, not like this, Lo Aleinu, but when we expect one thing and something else happens? How do we deal with that disconnect? The divide between the expectation and the reality. So one way to think about this is to meet someone, a person, a man, who had this kind of experience. He grew up in a time where things could have and would have and should have been good, but they didn't materialize, and he saw it firsthand. He probably grew up as a young boy thinking he's going to lead a great life. He's going to get married. He's going to have a family. He's going to, you know, accomplish and teach. But he never married. And he ended his life anonymously. We don't even know exactly 100% where he died. We just know that he suffered terribly at the hands of many different people. And this man, who I've had the privilege of getting to know a lot better the last couple of days and weeks in preparation for Tisha B'Av, I have to prepare in case Rachmana Litzlan Mashiach doesn't come. His name was Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu HaNavi. He came from a family of Kohanim in Anasos, which is a small town not far from Yerushalayim. If you go north from Yerushalayim, there's an Arab village called Anata. That Arab village is likely the site of Anasos, or Anatot. If you want to get to know Yirmiyahu better, first of all, there are several Sefarim on Sefer Yirmiyahu, but this is a Sefer I want to introduce to you. It just came out this year called Uncovering Yirmiyahu. It's a fascinating work by Rabbi Yehuda Landy, who, a quick shout out to one of the members of this group. I see that she's here today, Tammy Miller, who introduced me, her husband David. Tammy and David introduced me to Rabbi Landy, who is a tour guide at Talmud Chacham, a researcher. So he put out a book this year, just hot off the press, which incorporates archaeological finds, geographic understandings, and the history of the land of Israel with the book and the personality of Yirmiyahu. It is an absolutely fascinating work. It's an incredibly scholarly and fascinating work, but it's very accessible to the average person. And through this work and the work of Rabbi Bini Lau and others, I've had the chance to get to know this man a little bit better, this great historic figure, Yirmiyahu, Yirmiyahu HaNavi, Yirmiyahu the prophet. I want to share with you one episode that happens to Yirmiyahu that's maybe the strangest. One of the strangest, if not the strangest episode of the entire book of Yirmiyahu. It takes place in the 10th year of the king Tzidkiyahu. Now, Tzidkiyahu is the last king of Malch Yehuda, of the kings of Yehuda, before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. This is in the 18th year of the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar. What is Nebuchadnezzar most well known for? Anybody want to pop that in the chat to make sure everyone's still with me? Nebuchadnezzar is known for what? Okay, the lion's den, yes, but maybe in the context of Tisha B'Av, what is Nebuchadnezzar known for more? We're still here. Why is this important that Tzidkiyahu is being besieged by Nebuchadnezzar? That's right, he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. So what Yirmiyahu is prophesying about at this time, this is the 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar. This is the siege of Nebuchadnezzar, of Tzidkiyahu. This is the ultimate destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Previously, the Melech Bavel had been encircling, besieging Yerushalayim. There was a brief respite. Yirmiyahu tried to escape from the city because he had been telling them, Chevra, it's going to be destroyed. Everything is going to be destroyed. For years, Yirmiyahu had been the prophet who had told them, it's going to be destroyed. It's going to come a day. Echa Yashva Vazad. He told this to Yehoyakim. He told this to prior kings. And now they're literally at the end. This is the final siege. Yirmiyahu finds himself, because he tried to leave, he finds himself incarcerated. Yirmiyahu couldn't marry because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him that don't have any children. Don't marry. You're going to be alone. You can't live the life that you dreamed. Yirmiyahu complains bitterly so many times how much abuse he took from people by telling them that the Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed. They would all be taken away by Melech Bavel. So what happens? Literally on the doorstep of the destruction, in the 10th year, what happens? Yirmiyahu has a prophecy. It's Perek Lamed Beis. Says the Navi Yirmiyahu, says, I received the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hadover asher hoya el Yirmiyahu me'is Hashem b'shnas b'shano ha'asiris l'tzidkiyahu melech Yehuda shmona esrei l'shana l'vuzavaretzar. There's a discrepancy whether his name was Nebuchadnezzar or Nebuchadrezzar. The Nun and the Reish oftentimes change in Hebrew. Pasuk Gimel, if you see it on the screen, it tells you that Yirmiyahu was klo'o tzidkiyahu melech Yehuda. Tzidkiyahu, the king, imprisoned him, saying, why are you saying that we're going to be given to the king of Bavel? Why are you giving up hope? Why are you telling me that we're going to go into jail? Which is what he had been saying. Vayomer Yirmiyahu, Pasuk Zayin, Hine Hanamel ben Shalum dodadcha ba'ilecha lemor. Yirmiyahu, you know, you have a cousin. His name is Hanamel. Hanamel, the son of Shalum, your uncle, he's coming to you, and he's going to ask you a question. Do me a favor, he says. I have a business opportunity for you. Knei lecha es sodi asher ba'anasos. I have financial issues, cash-strapped time. You're my close relative. Buy this field, because you're the closest relative, which is in Anasos, the city in Binyamin, north of Yerushalayim, that belongs to Yirmiyahu's cousin, because you're the closest relative. And exactly that happens. Pasuk Ches, Hanamel shows up in jail and says to Yirmiyahu, I have a deal. You want to make a deal? I got a deal for you. Buy this field. Voekne es hasode. I buy the field. And I pay him 7 shkolim. If you look on this, in this book, if you could see on the screen, Rabbi Landy, he shows you measures, weights that were found in Israel, archaeological finds of weights that were found, ancient weight stones that they would weigh out for purchases. And then the Navi describes that you have to take this document, the document, the shtar that was written about this transition, Ko'amar Hashem Pasuk Yedalad Lakoach Asasvarma Eile, write it down. Baruch Ben Neriah, Yirmiyahu's scribe, has to document the transaction. You should put an earthenware vessel, which probably, says Rabbi Landy, looks like this. You see this jug? These were jugs that were used, terracotta vessels, in which the Dead Sea Scrolls were put. They should last, as the Pasuk Laman, Yamdu Yomim Rabin. And the Gemara quotes this Pasuk in different contexts about teaching about transactions and shtaros. Ki cho amar Hashem, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Pasuk Tazayin, Od yiknu batim v'sado suchram v'aretz hazos. People will buy land in this place. And Yirmiyahu says, I have no idea what I'm doing. I just don't get it. He turns to the Ribbono Shel Olam and says, I don't understand. What are you talking about, Ribbono Shel Olam? What are you telling me? Buy land in Anasos. We're on the precipice of destruction. You told me. Not only that, you told me a few prakim earlier in Perek Chav Tes. If you have it on the page, don't worry, it's just a few psukim. Says the Navi Yirmiyo, I had a prophecy in the name of God. You know there was originally a Golos in the days of Yechoniah, an earlier king, a few years earlier, that Bavel, the Babylonian Empire, had already taken away many of the highest ranking officers, the most prominent people. They'd taken them away. They exiled them to Bavel already before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. There was a Golos, an exile in Bavel. And what did Yirmiyahu tell them? Benu Batim! Build houses in exile. V'shevu v'nitu ganos v'ichlu espirion. Plant vineyards, settle in, get comfortable. Chu nashim, marry women v'holidu bonim u'bonos. You should marry in Golos, but Yirmiyahu, he couldn't marry because he was living in Israel, because it's going to be destroyed. The Ribbono Shel Olam told him he's not allowed to get married. And he says to the people in Golos, marry off your children, make weddings, grandchildren. V'dirshu Shlom Ha'ir, Pasuk Zion, say the tefillah l'shlom ha'medina. Pray for the Babylonians. You know why? Ki v'shlom ha'yeh lachem shalom. Because that's where you're going to be. So Yirmiyahu says, I don't understand. I don't understand. How could it be that on the one hand you're telling me now, buy, invest, believe in the future? On the other hand, you're telling me that the present is what we've got to live. And maybe the answer, and Emma alluded to one approach to this yesterday, but I think maybe there's another way of thinking about this, is that Yirmiyahu is presenting to us, on the one hand, an impossible paradox. On the other hand, perhaps it is the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects us to respond to unmet expectations, which is that we have to have two paths, two simultaneous approaches. We have to live with a little bit of an inner conflict, two different parts of our identity that we can tap into at different times. The first one is hope. It's confidence in the future. It's recognizing that things will be better. Od yeshvu zakenu zakenus. It will get better. It doesn't mean that it will be better for me. It doesn't mean that what I hope for and my davening will make that happen. Bitachon, this is a very important yesod. Bitachon, relying on Kadosh Baruch Hu, says the Chazon Ish, one of the greatest luminaries of the 20th century. It does not mean that everything is going to work out, even if you have the ultimate bitachon in Hashem. It doesn't mean that everything that I hope for is going to work out for me. What it means is that God is in charge. Ultimately, things will work out in the grand plan. Even if the people who lived at the time of Yirmiyahu wouldn't see the redemption, they would see destruction, their children. And if not their children, their grandchildren. So on the one hand, we hold out hope for the future. Doesn't mean that that is going to come to us. It doesn't mean that we are going to be able to celebrate that victory. But we know that that hope will come. We know that ultimately, an imam b'emunah shleima, there is a Ribbono Shel Olam. He's watching, he's taking care. That's number one. And that's why the Ribbono Shel Olam tells him, Yirmiyahu, even though you don't have a family, even though you know there's going to be a destruction, and you just told everyone in Chutz Laretz, settle in, maximize what you're doing, but you have to know there is a belief in the future. There is a geula that's going to come. That's on the one hand. There is hope at one point. But on the other hand, he's telling Yirmiyahu, you have to live in the present. Hayom, live today. Connect with me. Live your life. Bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world. Celebrate even. Capitalize on the opportunity that you have. Navigate the world in which you live and don't think so much about the future. That's the paradox. On the one hand, on some occasions, at some points, we need to think about the future. We need to remind ourselves, Animam be'emunah shleimah v'vias HaMashiach. We need to know that there will be a geula. We need to stay focused on the future. But at the same time, the focus is on the present. Not so much on the future. It's right here, right now. Yirmiyahu says to everyone, live and establish your life in Chutz La'aretz, in Galus, where you are. Don't forget, we invest in the future, we believe in the future, but at the same time live in the present. It's a little bit of a paradox, but it is an essential path, these two components of what it means to be a Jew. On the one hand, in the desert, when the Jewish people were traveling, their vision, their hope, their destiny was to get to the land of Israel. And even though they knew that they themselves wouldn't get there, they were walking there so that their children could get there. Moshe Rabbeinu led them, even though he would not go in, he led them because they were going somewhere. There was a destiny that they shared that was going to be there for them in the future. There was going to be a geula. They would take a tzinsenes. The pasuk says they take a container of man that they ate in the desert. And while they were in the desert, you know what they did? They put it in, they had like a, I guess it was like a Tupperware, biblical Tupperware. They would put it in a Tupperware next to the Aron. They took the tzinsenes haman and they saved it for the future. Because the people in the desert knew that their children would go into Eretz Yisrael. But at the same time, they lived every day for what it was. There's an achrona quote from Ramami Panu, Rav Menachem Azaria Fano, a great Italian achron, who says that, you know, in the desert they ate man every day. So the pasuk refers to that as lechem min hashamayim, bread from the heavens. So every day they ate bread that came from shamayim. So Ramami Panu says, you know what bracha they said? Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, hamotzi lechem min hashamayim. They said, motzi lechem hashamayim, because it didn't come from the Aretz. On the one hand, they put away man for the future, because they believed that ultimately it would be resolved. But on the other hand, they said a bracha on the man in the present. Yes, they had to get into those graves every Tisha B'Av and deal with that challenge, but they did so while still saying, hamotzi lechem hashamayim, in that makom. We say, Mehera Yibona HaMikdash, we look forward, we wait. We're Mitzapel Yeshua. We wait for the future Geula. That's one aspect of our personality. It's one part of our identity. It's essential. But at the same time, if you were to ask someone, what is the holiest place? There was a great Chabad Mashpia. His name was Rav Mendel Futterfass. A holy Yid. A great spiritual giant, but a simple man. Rav Mendel Futterfass was once talking to a little Yid, and the Jew had a conversation with him. So Rav Mendel said to him, he said, Rav Yid, tell me, where is the holiest place in the world? So the Yid said, you know, Yerushalayim, Er HaKodesh, the Beis HaMikdash, the Har HaBayis, that's the holiest place in the world. And Rav Mendel Futterfass said to him, nope, it's not. The holiest place in the world is the place where you're standing right now. Chavetz Chaim says on the Chumash, Moshe Rabbeinu was told, take off your shoes. Hamakom asher ata omed sham ad mas kodesh. The place where you are in the present is holy. Yes, we need to get back to the Beis HaMikdash. That's the ultimate holiest place. But at the same time, and in Judaism, these two themes, although they seem contradictory, are not. They can both be true. The holiest place in the world can be the future, can be Mashiach, but it could also be in the present. Some of you are familiar with this story. It's become a famous story, and we're going to chazer it because it really, it makes this exact point. There were two holy brothers, two great tzaddikim, Rebbe Elimelech of Luzhensk and Rebbe Zusha of Anapoli. And the Rebbe Elimelech and Rebbe Zusha, they used to go together, wandering the countryside, the farms and villages, in exile, feeling the pain of what the Ribbono Shel Olam, our Father in Heaven, feels when he's just wandering about in the world. And they were once caught by the local police, which was not uncommon, to pick up stray Jews and throw them into prison for whatever trumped-up charge. And there they were, Reb Melech and Reb Zusha, they were sitting in this prison, a dank cell, surrounded by a group of hooligans, local real criminals, lowlifes. Reb Melech and Reb Zusha, they're looking at each other. How did they end up here? Och and vey. Look who they're with, vagabonds and criminals packed into this little cell. There's one door and one little window, a tiny ray of light coming in. That's all they could see, that it's daytime. And start getting later in the afternoon, they could see it starting to get a little bit more shadowy. And Reb Melech says to Reb Zusha, says, Zusha, heilig Reb Zusha, we need a daven mincha. Reb Zusha says, yeah, we got a daven mincha. The problem is, Reb Melech says, look over there. In this tiny cell right on the other side, there's a bucket. Because unfortunately, they didn't have restrooms, didn't have a place to relieve themselves. So the local authorities, they left a bucket in the cell for all the prisoners to use. It was exposed, and it had a foul odor that was permeating the entire room. And they looked at each other as the brothers. They realized they can't daven mincha near this bucket. Can't daven mincha where the bucket is. They're looking there. And Reb Melech says, I can't believe it. Holy brother, Reb Zusha, I can't believe we're not going to be able to daven mincha because look where we are. When we came to this town, I expected we were going to daven in the shtiebel. I know there's a very warm place. Holy Jews, they come together, they daven every afternoon. They daven mincha there. And now, Zusha, look, we're not even going to be able to daven mincha at all. So Reb Zusha says to Reb Melech, he says, brother, yeah, I get it. I know, I understand what you're disappointed about. But you know, says Zusha. Reb Zusha says, but the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't want us to daven mincha here. He wants us to be with him without mincha. Because the halacha dictates that you can't daven mincha when there's a pot, a bucket of excrement in your proximity. You can't daven mincha. So our connection to God right here, right now, it's not what we expected, but the reality is that we have a bucket, and that bucket means we can't daven. So not davening is our connection to God. Reb Melech, he says, we're not davening, and we're being with God. And Reb Melech says, Taka, Reb Zusha, you know you're right. And they start looking at each other, they start feeling a little better, and here they are in this dank, rotten, smelly cell, and they put one arm on each other, and they start shaking, and they start dancing, a little dance here in the prison. They're dancing with each other. And they sing a niggin, and they start going back and forth with a niggin and a dance, and a niggin and a dance. Meanwhile, they're oblivious totally to the other prisoners who are looking at them in absolute, utter bewilderment. And at a moment's notice, the door swings open and a guard looks in. He says, what's the commotion? And he sees two Jews dancing in the prison. He says, there's no dancing in here. So he says, what's doing? So the other prisoners, they say, they were looking at the bucket and they started dancing. So the warden, he says, the bucket, that's what's making them dance? I'll show them. He takes the bucket, he throws it out of the jail cell, and he slams the door. And Reb Zusha says to Reb Melech, all right, brother Melech, now we can daven. Now we can daven mincha. Because sometimes living in the present, connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is possible, as difficult as it is, even when our reality does not meet our expectations. Even when we're not in that ideal road trip, when we're in Gullus. On the one hand, in Gullus, we are Mitzapa LeYeshua. We wait and anticipate and need to remind ourselves. And part of the Avodah of Tisha B'Av, of the 9 days, and why we're learning right now, and what our goal is in life, is to remind ourselves that it's not okay, that life is not normal, that we are in exile, that we need to look to the future, to believe that one day Mashiach will come, maybe today, maybe tomorrow, maybe in a generation, we don't know when. To believe in the future, to have hope that the Ribbono Shel Olam will bring us back. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am God who took you out of Egypt. I'm going to take you out, says the Smak, one of the great Balei Tosfos, I'm going to take you out in the future. But at the same time, there is a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Gullus, in the disappointment. If you look in the Sfas Emes, in Parshas Vayera, he says that when we are in Gullus, Chazal say, we attract converts. What does that mean, we attract converts? It means we become a light unto the nation in our little corners of darkness, whether it's in Skokie, or in Miami, or in New York, or wherever we are, in Iran. If you look at the Shem Yishmuel and Sefer Bereishis, he talks about it, according to the tradition, the smaller tradition, the secret tradition of the Musar, of the Masorah, of the Kabbalah, there are nitzotos, there are sparks out there in the world. And while we wish and we hope and we plan for a future, right now, we are bringing those sparks out. The Ribbono Shel Olam created an internet, he created wireless, RCN, Echves, all the different things that we're tapping into right now to have a conversation about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, about bringing God into our lives. And that even though this is not what we expected, when Emma sat with us at the beginning of the year and we talked about the Yarchei Kala, we didn't expect that we wouldn't be physically together. That wasn't our expectation, but that's our reality. So on the one hand, we hope and we know that one day things will get back to normal, b'si'ata d'shmaya, there will be a ge'ula. And if not for us, for our children. That's part of our identity, that's part of our consciousness. But at the same time, in the present, we say, how do we connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu where we are? Ad Mas Kodesh, right now, Rav Kook writes in Musar Avicha, Behold Rachecha Do'eu, know God in all His ways, Tzorech Levakish Es HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we need to seek out the Ribbono Shel Olam. In all the ways that he works through them. Meaning, he gave us the circumstance that we're in. We don't necessarily understand why. We don't know for what. But we know that we have an opportunity to reach out to him. Hari Be'emes, the truth is, says the Hilga Rav Kook, Ein Dover Be'olam She'inu L'chvodo. There's nothing in the world that's not for the honor of the Borei Olam. A pandemic is also connecting us to the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's nothing that's out there. It's not. Al kein kol ma she'osi yakol. Everything that a person does should be in that purpose, in every circumstance, connecting to the Ribbono Shel Olam. On the one hand, we plan for, we anticipate, we hope for the future, but that's not where we live. We live in the present. It's interesting that one opinion is that even when the Mashiach comes, the difference is going to be the Shibud Malchios. But at the end of the day, it's living in the present. Hayom. How many times does it tell us in the Torah? Hayom. Asher Anochi Mitzavcha. Hayom. Hayom. Don't worry about the past. Don't worry about the future. Live in today. We believe in the future, but we connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Our avoda is in today. And when was there a darker moment? When was there a greater disparity between expectations and reality than there was in the darkest period of our history, in this past generation, the generation of the Shoah, of the Holocaust, when we remember this week of Tisha B'Av, among the Tzaras of the Beis HaMikdash and the generations, those who have perished, the 6 million individuals. Here too we find the same dialectic. Faced with a situation in which they had an expectation. They expected a Jewish life, a free life, their families. And that expectation was met with the harshest, most destructive, worst possible reality anybody could ever imagine. And they were able, so many were able, to tap into this paradox, these two elements. To believe that there will be a future, but also to live in the present. I introduced you on your screen two men who knew each other. They knew each other well. On the right-hand side, you see this script. This is a Xerox copy of a piece of the diary of Dr. Hillel Seidman, Zichrono Levracha, who before the war was a prominent scholar, rabbi, author, who chronicled what went on in the ghetto. In the Warsaw Ghetto. And to your left, the Heiliger of Klonimus Kalman Shapira, Hashem Yikom Damus Chus Yagan Aleinu, the Piasetzner Rebbe. There he is, the one picture that, I don't know if anybody else has ever seen one. I think it's the one picture with his son who was killed during Sukkot in the aftermath of the bombing of the Warsaw Ghetto. On the one hand, the Rebbe and Dr. Seidman, they believed there would be a future. They believed there would be a future, so they both took the writings that they had in the ghetto, and each one of them, if we had another, I don't know, 6-7 hours, we could unpack them separately, individually. They each wrote, Dr. Seidman wrote a diary, and the Rebbe wrote down drushos. And they wrote them for future generations. Dr. Seidman, he describes in his diary how he struggled to write, how it was difficult for him. I don't have the book in front of me, I have it downstairs. And how he was encouraged by Rabbi Ari Berglass, who we could talk about in a different context, also an amazing individual, who said to him, we need to write for the future, for the people who will survive. So he buried his writings. He came back after the war, he found them and he published them. On the one hand, he had no idea if he would survive, which he did miraculously. He wrote for the future. He believed that one day the Ribbono Shel Olam would save us. The Pius Etzner, he wrote down his drushas. He buried them through probably the Onik Shabbos archives under the ghetto, found years after the war. Sent them to his brother, who was the Admor HaChalutz, a Zionist pioneer living in the land of Israel. He says, please, someone publish them. Even if there are no Jews in Poland, no rabbis, somebody will publish them. There will be a day where these will come to light. But yet, they both lived in the present. The Rebbe gave drushos for the people at that time, in that circumstance, talking to them, meeting their needs, connecting them to the Ribbono Shel Olam within their suffering, within the reality that they lived. On the one hand, he believed there would be a Yeshua if not for him, and he did not survive. He was sent to a labor camp outside of Lemberg called Tchuaniki. He was killed in November of 1943. But even though he didn't survive, his teaching survived. So this is where kind of we close with, on the one hand, these two elements, the hope for the future and the living in the present. On the one hand, they are distinct. On the other hand, in a certain sense, they create a synthesis. On the one hand, we're saying that the Jews in the desert, on the one hand, they hoped for the land of Israel. They knew that their children would go, or their grandchildren would go. Somebody would go to the land of Israel. They hoped for that. On the other hand, they lived in the present. In the exile, we hope for Mashiach, but we live in the present. The Jews, they believed that there would be a salvation. There would be light at the end of the tunnel, but they lived in the present. Those are separate and distinct. On the other hand, they are interconnected. Because what is it that lived on for the future the way that they lived in the present? The fact that the Jews ate man in the desert, they lived with the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's what we remember about them. The fact that in that present destruction, Yirmiyahu was building a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that becomes his legacy. The fact that the Rebbe gave drushos in the ghetto, that's the legacy that we have today. So on the one hand, today, we're living in the present while hoping for the future. We're living in the present. But it's that present that we live today that will ultimately be our future. That will be our legacy. For many people, such a trying time right now. Such a difficult time. Whether it's mitzad from the 9 days perspective, whether it's from being isolated. But living in this present gives us an opportunity. How we live in this present, the way that we occupy ourselves, the way that we use our time, the way that we relate to others, the way that we use technology to stay connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to friends, to Torah, and ultimately, the way that we live in the present, that's the legacy for the future. Then when people will ask us one day, what was it like during a pandemic? We'll say, this is what we accomplished. This is how we connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is how we connected to each other. People would ask, what was it like in the Dor HaMidbar? The Gemara has descriptions, stories of how they wore tefillin and how those tefillin were buried away in the desert somewhere. If you were to ask people who lived in the desert, what was their legacy? It's that they said every day,
Hamotzi lechem min hashamayim, that they put on tefillin, even though they knew they were not getting into the land of Israel. You know, we don't know what's in store. We don't know what the Ribbono Shel Olam has planned for us. We know that there is a hope, ultimately a tikvah, a hope HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring us the Yeshua. But in addition to that hope, there's also the opportunity to live in the present and create that legacy for ourselves. Thank you all for joining. I hope you have a fantastic day of learning. Be well and enjoy your next sessions. The next step is to go back to the general website. You're going to click in to the next session that you'd like, and it'll take you to the next Zoom room where you're headed for the next year. Feel free to be in touch. Thank you for coming. Have a great day.